planet that we are worth saving. And I don't think I would give too much thought to our martyrs of negative.
Yeah. Let me put one more thing in your mind, Joyce, and then I'll let you go so we can get to the other callers.
Okay.
You know where we come from, and we have a thing called NASA. And we have some very, very limited and primitive space capability. Let's just go in our minds. Let's go ahead about 20 years or 30 years where perhaps we could go to another planet. Now, can you see NASA or the government of the United States, for instance, wanting to invade that planet?
No.
No, of course not. Why? We may want to interface with it if we see, you know, that life is down there. And let's say that it's life down there that's like it was 1,000 years ago in the Middle Ages or something. Our intent then would be to help it, I suppose, if we could. But we certainly wouldn't want to interfere with it and create problems because of our presence. We'd probably sit and watch for it a while. And that's what happens here. They want to... Who would want to run this planet? You know, just the bankers, that's all.
But do you think they're doing a very good job, Bill?
And they're not doing a very good job.
Oh, they're doing a horrible job. They've ruined it, and they're out of it. You know, there's a whole new age, a whole subculture that's moving up around them, and they know that their time is up.
Absolutely.
All right, Joyce, does that help you? I hope we answered you.
Yeah, it does.
Remember, you read the tabloids for entertainment, not for information.
But it said Dr. Alan Hynek, and he's pretty, you know, well-known.
Let me just tell you, dear, that Dr. Alan Hynek has never... seen a UFO.
That's true. He has been on this program on a number of occasions.
By the fact that he has not, but he has never seen a UFO. He also spent 20 years debunking UFOs when he was working on Project Blue Book for the United States Air Force.
But then he changed his mind.
Changed his mind, did a 360-degree turn, but has never seen one. So take that with a grain of salt.
And not only that, Dr. Hynek, who has privied information... has never seen a UFO do anything other than something benign or defensive.
That's true. He's a friend of ours, and he has not seen one.
Oh, okay. Well, you have a really interesting show, Bill.
Well, thank you very much. It's more interesting because you're listening. Okay, Joyce?
Okay, good night.
All right.
Good night.
And we have Vicky. Hi, Vicky.
Yes, hello, Bill. How are you? I'd like to ask Greta a question.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Greta, about the Ogatians... what do they think about our civilization compared to the others that they know?
As I said before, they put us on an evolutionary scale of two. You have to understand we're very, very young technologically.
Yes.
We're a baby. All of our technology is less than 100 years old. So from that standpoint, we're just babes. If you were to look at our planet, you might call us a warring planet, might you not?
Mm-hmm.
No, you can, with all confidence.
With all confidence. And now we're investigating space. It's a small wonder that more highly evolved groups are looking closely at why we are in space and where.
Mm-hmm.
As for the Ogata group, they view us very kindly.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And they wish to be helpful.
And, Greg, can I just say one more thing? When I was thinking, when you first mentioned the Ogatans, this word came into my mind, Sharu. Does that mean anything to you?
I'm afraid not.
Okay.
But that doesn't matter. It could mean something in the cosmos.
And could I ask, what is your address for the Woodrow?
Thank you for asking. We have a wonderful address. It's Rabbit Skin Road.
Yeah, Rabbit Skin Road?
Uh-huh.
448 Rabbit Skin Road?
Yes, 448 Rabbit Skin Road.
448, uh-huh.
Waynesville.
Greensville?
No, what? Waynesville. W-A-Y-N-E-S.
Could you repeat that? I'm sorry.
In North Carolina. And our zip code here is 28786.
What was the city again? I'm sorry.
Waynesville.
Waynesville?
Uh-huh.
Oh, great.
I'll give you that address again.
So. Okay.
And I do want you to know, if you are writing in for the update, that every penny of it goes to research. We don't take any money for anything psychic in what we do.
Oh, really? Now, may I ask how much, do I send a check or what?
See, when you make your check out to STAR, it's tax deductible because it is a non-profit organization.
Oh, great.
And it's anything from $30 up that you can afford.
Oh, thank you so much.
I tell you what, you'll get all of that information.
Yes.
When you write them. They'll get it all back to you.
Great. And, Bill, thanks.
And all I can tell you is that I personally enjoy their letter more than anything that I receive in the mail.
Oh, great, Bill. Thanks again, Bill.
All right.
Good night.
Thank you. And we have Joe on the line. Hello, Joe.
Hi there. Mm-hmm. I had a brief question for Gerda.
Mm-hmm.
She was saying before that she had been receiving information about materialization, dematerialization, and teleportation as a quote. Now, I would be willing to believe this if there was one blueprint along with it.
Is that a statement or a question?
That's a question.
When I said received information, I did not say I received information. I said I was shown all three of those things. Materialization became a way of life in our house. Things would appear and disappear in front of many people. Teleportation, as you know, is when here you see it, it's gone, and it appears somewhere else. I myself was dematerialized in front of my son and my husband. These were ways that the Ogata group, I guess, converted us to believing totally in them as a group.
The question, of course, is if you are being teleported and materialized in front of, say, two family members, why not in front of, say, a press conference?
Well, Joe, Greta is not in control of these psychic phenomena. They are a technology which hopefully the planet, our scientists, will attain within a reasonably short period. But it's only a technology, and it requires our understanding the gravitational waves, which we have yet to be able to measure, to be able to detect. It's part of the unified field, and it's part of the energy speed-ups, which they do control in moving their craft as well as any other objects. It's the same field effect that we are approaching and that Einstein spoke about in his unified field theory, but which we're missing one link.
Well, that's all very interesting. The problem is it doesn't speak to the point of my question, which is simply this. If I say there are green pelicans at the North Pole, it is incumbent upon me to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that there are indeed pelicans at the North Pole. If you are saying there is teleportation that you have accomplished and materialization, it is therefore incumbent upon you to demonstrate this in some fashion before scientists or others.
Only if you seek to change people's mind and prove it in a scientific way.
Tell me why it's incumbent upon anything. Joe, for instance, if I were teleported across the room or across the street,
mm-hmm.
I don't feel that it's incumbent upon me then to get into the physics and dynamics of how that happened. I happen to know that happened. Plus the fact if I have witnesses that saw it happen, it happened. The fact that you do it in front of a press corps doesn't mean a damn thing. You got to know the press corps like I do.
Yeah.
Means nothing.
You are correct in one respect. You do not have to prove it. That's right. Except once you go on national talk shows and you say, I have done this, then all of a sudden it does become incumbent upon you not to investigate it, but to demonstrate it again.
You have done it, and it's another thing to say it was done to you.
Well, isn't this not like
control of it? I probably still would never go, as Bill suggests, in front of a press corps. Our objective is not to get to the press.
Okay.
That doesn't really accomplish a lot of things.
No, it doesn't.
What brings to my mind is the Billy Myers story.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here were photographs, here were movies, here were rock and mineral samples. The rock and mineral samples particularly were investigated thoroughly at IBM by Dr. Marcel Vogel. And out of that laboratory said that these were mineral samples and alloy samples that were beyond the ability of our technology to make. The photographs and the movies of the spacecraft involved in this particular case, those actions and those movements could not have been made by models, and there was no goings-on with trick photography. But the press corps, because it is beyond their reality box, says it's a hoax. Because, you know, the press corps are all instant physicists. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're the greatest physicists of our time are at the assignment desk at the press.
You know, Bill, you go through certain stages. I think it behooves you to give yourself to science for so long, and I did. I was tested in labs and so forth. But there comes a time when you cannot continue to just do repetitive things again and again for the sake of repetition. And that's what science is about. It must be repetitive. Well, things in parapsychology are not always on command, and they're not always repetitive.
I agree.
You know, another thing, Joe, is with Greta. For instance, I have seen with my own eyes,
uh-huh.
and I will show them to you, the metal bending things. And not only just bending, Greta, you even shrink spoons. 25%.
Now, of course, on bending spoons, Uri Geller used to do that as part of his act.
Uri used I've held a key in my hands, and Uri looked at it, and it melted. I mean, just bent like it was made out of wax.
Well, with all due
right
respect,
here on the air at this
yes.
radio station. So that actually happened, and it was in my hands, Joe. It wasn't a trick. It actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
Those bent spoons that Greta has, that I have in my possession that are framed, it wasn't a trick. They just happened. The shrunk spoons, I mean a spoon shrinking 25%, Joe, that is a fact of life.
I would like to say one thing to you, Joe. It might make you feel a little better. A good friend of mine was Buckminster Fuller. I have wonderful mail from him when he was trying at a cerebral level, which I think is important, to help me unlock the mystery of materialization and dematerialization. I wanted answers just like you did. How? How can we conjure this up ourselves? Not being an instrument, not being a vehicle, not being a channel, not being a psychic, not being a sensitive. How can we make this work for us and make it a viable force in this world? And we have wonderful mail from him that almost did unlock it.
And well, I'm not asking for how. I've never asked for how. I'm simply saying that there is no distinction here between this and, say, a person who has come from the Philippines and said, I brought five people to life as a faith healer. And this, there is no real distinction. There is no evidence.
In the Philippines, there is great evidence. There's actually movies of it happening.
Uh-huh.
High-speed movies of these faith healings happening. That had been taken by some of our highest, I think, Duke University, Stanford University, took high-speed movies of these incredible things happening in the Philippines. And then the AMA doesn't want to talk about that, Joe.
Well,
we have this great syndrome in the United States that if it's so, the government will tell us. And I think it goes back to really a marvelous motion picture, The Day the Earth Stood Still, where the flying saucer appeared in Washington. Now, that's what everybody wants to happen, that it would appear right there on the White House lawn, and the president
well,
would go out there and converge with...
Well, President Carter saw one and reported it, didn't he, Bill?
Yeah. And, of course, in that movie also, we noticed the tanks and the guns were there. But that's not going to happen. You know, that's got our heads in the sand. That's not the way the world works. You know, we think that those people who are aliens should think the way we think. They think at a level beyond ours, because we're primitive, remember, Joe.
Well, why wouldn't they come to Washington?
And get their ship destroyed? Do you know what would happen if a flying saucer landed on the mall in Washington? It would be instantly knocked out. Are you kidding?
Assuming it didn't have technology to defend itself.
Would you land yours there?
If I knew that a center of power on any given planet was located in a certain area, I would, of course, go there. I mean, I could defend myself. The Egyptian...
Whenever you know that the Air Force right now has a standing order to shoot down anyone they see, would you want to get anywhere near where they are?
Well, let me put it this way. The English Army and Navy had no problem whatsoever walking into the corridors of power of the Indians and others and knocking them right out of the water or defending themselves from attack for quite a long time. Any superior technology that confronts a lesser technology...
Talk to General Custer about how superior his technology was.
You're also outnumbered, and it wasn't that superior in that condition. But, you know, an envoy would have some kind of defensive technique.
But why should they even go through the trouble?
Why should they go through the trouble talking to one woman and showing her things that can't be replicated?
Because there the communication can be established.
I won't pursue any further, but I will pass on. There's an old joke about flying saucers called buzzards that would come down, pick the person least likely to be believed, buzz them, make plain noises, and go off, knowing they'd never be believed, just for a laugh. And I wonder if we're dealing with something like that here.
Well, I tell you, we've had it on this show before, and I'll send you copies if you will ask me for it. A memorandum from Douglas MacArthur. Another memorandum from George C. Marshall,
mm-hmm.
who was the chief of staff of the United States Armed Forces, and you know who Douglas MacArthur was.
Oh, yes.
These two men talking openly and clearly about the UFO problem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that isn't an old man picking buzzards. Those were two of the most important people of their time.
Mm-hmm.
I will also give you a definition and a total description of a UFO encounter by James Earl Carter.
Okay, I'll make a deal with you.
Who was the President of the United States.
Okay, I'll deal with you then.
All right.
And I can exchange for that. I will send you... See, I met your regular. I worked with him a couple of times. I will send you a brief on how you, too, can bend spoons.
Everybody can.
No, by touching them in a way that is faked. It can be done. I've done it. My friends have done it.
Fake?
That's very true.
Oh, yeah.
True.
Absolutely.
That is very true, Joe. Almost anybody can fake anything that's real. And there's no question about that. However, it doesn't take away from the validity of the reality. I myself never touch a spoon when it bends.
I see.
She never does. The spoon that was bent in my presence, she never touched it. She touched my hand. My hand was on top of the spoon.
Mm-hmm.
I lifted my hand up and the spoon was bending and wiggling like crazy.
That's right. That's part of the process.
And
well, I'll send you the instructions on how you can do it at home yourself.
All right, very good. What about shrinking them?
Huh? I'd have to see how it was done.
No, just look at them, watch them shrink.
Well, I say if it makes them happy, keeps them out of trouble, fine.
All right, Joe. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. You know, the skeptics' comments are always great.
All right, thank you.
All right.
Bye.
I'm Bill Jenkins.
It doesn't cost much, Bill.
No, in fact, it's very healthy. I think it's a part of life, and it should be there. We're 14 minutes away from 11 o'clock on a Saturday.
I want to address my question to Greta.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'd like to know is I'm very much a believer, and I work a lot with crystals and healing work and going from three-dimension to four-dimension. I'm also working with a group of people that channel what they call the Ashtar Command, and they've said something about information. Latest information has to do with a possible earthquake in the Los Angeles area at the end of January, that they're working towards, you know, having it not manifest. But my question is, have the Agata given any information about this area, particular area, in
when
terms
we
of earthquakes?
When we first began speaking, you know, it was a question of if there would be a problem with the San Andreas Fault. Now I think sensibility tells us all it's just a question of when. And I do not have any time frame for it, I'm sad to tell you. But I think that sensibility will tell you that it is a suspect area.
How about, I'm curious if you heard the words, or have they talked anything about an evacuation plan? That they geographically will pick people up and move them to proper...
We are not of that mind.
Uh-huh.
There are those indeed who talk about evacuations and spaceships coming in and lifting people off.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the message of the Elgata group with whom I connect. They feel that if we are to survive, best we prepare for it in the best way that we know how, and that's what we have done. Ask yourself questions, answer them, prepare yourself to survive right here on planet Earth. Are you far enough away from a major city to be safe in case of a strike or a shortage or rioting? Are you aware of your shifting weather patterns and how it can affect your area? For you, how close are you to a fault line? For me, a nuclear facility. They ask you to question if you are considering a move, whether you can grow your own food that doesn't need refrigeration for year-round storage. What they really ask you is, are you permanently tied to your lifestyle, your job, your geography? That's something to think about very honestly and very carefully. And if you decide, yes, I am, then within that area, there are things that you sensibly should and must do. What is your water situation, for example? That is the big problem coming up, water.
Water gets to be a bigger and bigger problem all the time.
That's correct. And
drink some of the L.A. water, you understand?
You're abdicating responsibility to others, whether it's an extraterrestrial group or a government group. The Elgata group say, no, you cannot abdicate your own responsibility. They have never indicated any sort of liftoff. What they have given us directions to, if not directives, is to find an area that we can be comfortable in case there is a disaster.
I have some questions in my mind, Julie,
mm-hmm.
about the information that supposedly comes from the Ashtar Command, about whether that is really a manifestation of some sort of communication or whether that's a manifestation of imagination.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be quite popular, but it hasn't said anything yet. It hasn't given us any data. It hasn't given us any paranormal information, as is the case with what Greta has received from the Ugatans, that has been absolutely correct right on down the line.
Mm-hmm.
The same way with the information we get from the people from Pleiades.
Mm-hmm.
They have been extremely accurate in everything that they have been able to transmit to us in a very limited way because people don't pay attention.
You know, Julie, a great deal of information is available on survival today, and there are no two sources that seem to agree when it comes to how many or which supplies, for example, you should store and so forth. But there's one undisputed matter. The one trait universal to survival seems to be attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And the tools for survival are in our heads. And without the right attitude, there are no tools that can save you and no spaceships that can save you. I think it's a matter of coming to grips with what you really believe. And it goes back to this business of what is your lifestyle, how fond of it are you, and how willing are you to shake it up.
I think they're all saying basically that we can change things. If we will, but from a pragmatic standpoint, as they look at the quality of life on planet Earth, they figure that that's not going to happen. So we're just going to have to endure for a while.
May I share with you something that somebody from Los Angeles, one of our updaters, told us about?
You can in a minute.
Okay.
Because I have to do something here. Do you want to hang on, Julie? Have a second here. Julie wants you to finish, okay?
Okay. I was just going to ask Greta again. At the beginning of the program, she had mentioned that the Avanta had given her some kind of, or the book that you had written, had given a series of events that were going to take place. So I'm wondering, okay, after the disasters take place, what is the scenario that they've given you?
But you know what, Julie?
Yeah.
That's a very good question. And do you want to answer that, Greta? Can I get into that? Because we're going to have to get out of this hour.
Okay.
So let's hold that, Dick and Greta, if you will.
All right.
Everybody can get a cup of coffee.
All right.
And come back for our Greta Woodrow. Greta is the author of The Slight of Light, a marvelous book, and I hope you can find a copy and get it. I know at Alexander, too, they have a lot of them. That's their favorite little bookstore out there in Pasadena. She and her husband, Dick Smolo, who are on the line with us from North Carolina tonight, are in charge of the Space Technology and Research Foundation, STAR, the STAR Foundation. They laboriously work over one of the finest newsletters in the world called the Woodrow Update. I recommend that you get into that. We'll tell you how to get that a little bit later. You just should. But more importantly, you should talk to Greta. Greta, if you've been listening for the last couple of hours, has had an ongoing experience with a group of aliens called the Ugatans. Now, you may say, woo, 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 accept everything that they have told her, almost without fault, I think, has been accurate. And so now we have to look at this paranormal information that has been given and see that it's happening, which is certainly beyond her background for that to happen. We were in the process of talking, I think, to, was it Beverly we were talking? Julie. Julie, let's continue your conversation, okay?
Yes, Julie, you asked about the tomorrow. What happens after these catastrophes? Let me say to you that most people who deal in specifics usually miss.
Mm-hmm.
Edgar Casey is your prime example here. I don't even try to deal in specifics. And it's not that I care about success or failure. That's not the criteria by which I live. I like those who dare to try because they also dare to fail. That's our leadership group. That's the bottom line. I don't ask for, and therefore I do not receive, the specifics. In answer to your question, know that historically, after catastrophe, every surviving species has always been stronger, better, brighter, and more evolved than they were in the past. The extraterrestrials have told us that they think things out. Humans talk things out. One of the things they tell us is that it will be possible to have telepathic communication as a norm. That sort of lets out a room for lying, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. I like the thought of telepathic communication, where the thought is pure. They talk about the new crop of babies coming in who are more alert, more aware, in our terms, with higher consciousness. and they talk about this golden age that's going to come. I see a light at the end of the tunnel, the millennium. I am very encouraged that this is a cleansing process on planet Earth that will see us through to a wonderful tomorrow. If I didn't feel that way, I couldn't do this, my dear.
You know, in the midst of what we're seeing, and we're beginning to see the beginning of the catastrophic changes, they're not all going to happen overnight, but they're happening all around us.
Happening every day.
But in the midst of all of that, you know, we've talked about the dawning of the new age, or the age of Aquarius, or the golden age, as the Yogatans call it. Dawn is no longer here. We're now seeing the first beams of light from the dawning sun shine upon us in the midst of the old world beginning to fall down around us. We've talked so much about the fact that governments, our system of providing goods and services, and our religions are not working well anymore, certainly not as they were intended. And it's simply because they're not addressing themselves to this new age. And there is a new thing happening all over the world. It's a subculture, if you want to look at it that way, that is happening, an alternative.
Right.
And that's what's happening now.
It's the end of the old order and the beginning of the new.
Right, we're at the transition time, which is in a very exciting time to be. It really is.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you.
Glad you were bored.
Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Beverly, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thank you, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just keep you a moment because my questions also are concerning Ashtar.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, has Greta read the book called Ashtar, which is channeled by Tuella?
I have read the book, yes, I have. And I'm in contact with a few of the people connected with it.
Uh-huh. Well, I guess maybe I'm too gullible. I'm a great believer, and I believed everything the book told me, but you don't believe that what he has said would come about?
I didn't say that.
Oh.
What I said was that my contact with the Ogata group never gave an indication that there would be any liftoff of any kind. And, of course, one must be faithful to what one knows. This is my own personal reality.
Uh-huh.
And my reality says that we had best survive within our own skin and not expect anybody or anything to make decisions for us. I have to go with that.
Yeah, I see.
That's
so
not...
my attitude on survival is quite different than those of the Ashtar Command.
There is a group outside of Chicago called the Stell Group. You may have read about them. They also believe in being lifted off. However, if you take the one rule of the cosmos, which appears to be primary, and that is free will, it would appear to me, just in a logical sense, that that would be an abridgment of our free will. We have to see ourselves through in the times of transition, and we will come out stronger.
Uh-huh. Well...
You know, that has a logical base to it, but let me just add a little bit about Tuwilla's work.
Yeah.
I have my own reservations about it, but that's just my own personal opinion.
Mm-hmm.
However, from the Palladian group, through the Billy Meyer group in Switzerland, there is some talk about that capability being available, if necessary, if it falls within the free will of the people at that time. It's almost like there are some that perhaps should be salvaged. In various localities where it's kind of severe.
Let me say this to you. I think that actions speak louder than words, so let me tell you what we are doing because we do not accept a liftoff. We are preparing for ourselves and for maybe you, who knows, food storage, first aid, sleeping equipment, medicines, lanterns, radios, water, emergency toilets. We are making sure that on our property at least two know CPR and know it well to reduce suffering. We are trying to root people to handle themselves in time of stress so that they don't meet it with hysteria. You know, I started to tell, I think it was Vicky before, that there's a group right in L.A. that offer what they call a 10-house plan. Have you heard about that?
No, I haven't.
Well, it had its start, apparently, at a Stanford University hotline program. And what they do, very simply, is this. They take 10 houses in a neighborhood, and they form a cooperative survival group.
Uh-huh.
Now, of course, earthquakes are top of the list of priorities.
Out here, yes.
Okay. The objective in each block of 10 is to have access to layout of, for example, gas line shutoffs, water shutoffs, electricity boxes for each house. They make a map, which they copy, and a set is given to each of these 10 households in the group. And that way, if someone is away during a disaster, neighbors can take care of...